Hi, my name's Nick Smith, founder and creator of Part-Time Pilot. Now, after 3 years, five flight instructors, and over $22,000 out of my bank account, I was finally able to achieve my dream and become a private pilot. Now, I have a bachelor's and master's in aerospace engineering and over 10 years experience as a flight test engineer. So if it was that difficult for someone like me, no wonder 8 out of 10 student pilots never end up becoming a pilot. So this is why I created Part-Time Pilot, and this is why I'm creating this podcast. This podcast will be your audio ground school and just another way Part-Time Pilot is making flight training easier and more consumable for you. So with over 300 students and counting that have used our content to pass the FAA private pilot exams, I hope that you can use this podcast to become the next student to do so. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy listening to the Part-Time Pilot Audio Ground School Podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome into the Audio Ground School Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Smith, founder and creator of Part-Time Pilot and the Audio Ground School Podcast. How's everybody doing today? It's April 8th, so, you know, we're getting into spring, summer's coming. That means a lot of hopefully good weather is coming soon. I know it's pretty crazy weather off and on in the spring in a lot of parts of the country, so kind of hard to schedule flights right now, but maybe getting closer to that. Anyways, today's episode, we're going to continue kind of going on with our check ride prep. So we're going to be reading, you know, and elaborating on some of the lessons in our private pilot check ride prep course, which you can bundle with our online ground school or you can get just separately, but we'll be talking about that. And today's episode is all going to be about what to expect on your check ride. So it'll be like, and this is huge because, I mean, this is what preparation is all about, right? If you are fully prepared, you know exactly what to expect. You can prepare accordingly, and then you can feel confident and you're ready and prepared, right? So what to expect is really big. We're going to talk about what to expect in terms of qualifications, and we'll get into what that means. What to expect in terms of the oral portion of your check ride, because again, there's kind of, I look at it as three parts of a check ride. There's, you get there and there's a qualifications. So you have to prove that you are qualified for the flight. You have to prove that your aircraft is qualified for the flight. And then the next part is the oral exam portion. And inside that is, you'll go over your check ride scenario, right? Your cross country scenario. And then there's the flight portion, right? When you actually go and fly with your examiner and do all that stuff. So we'll do what to expect qualifications, what to expect on the oral exam, what to expect on the flight exam, the, you know, the actual practical part, and then what to expect in terms of how you are graded, what to expect when what to expect and how you're graded. So we're going to cover those here today. And so it's going to be a long episode. So I'm just going to get right into it. I do have one announcement. I've talked about our spring scholarship. Just want to remind everybody, we do 4 scholarships a year. 3 of those are $1,000 scholarships just to members of our online ground school. But this one in the spring, we open it up to anyone who is flight training in the U.S., actively flight training in the U.S. And it's bigger than $1,000. At least that's the plan. So far, we've raised over $3,200. We have a GoFundMe, and I've been working real hard to find some corporate sponsorships. I've been able to find 3 of them, you know, Plain English AR Sim, shout out to them. They've been a huge sponsor. Core Aviation is a new sponsor that we just got. They make my favorite headsets. And then Fly Like a Local, a really cool app for pilots in your local community. So we've gotten some sponsors. I'm trying to get more. I'm working real hard. So if you guys could also, you know, help me out and share the GoFundMe link, or, you know, if you have anything to give, donate a little bit. We're going to try to make it as big as possible. Our goal is $10,000. So I'll put that link in the show notes, and even if you just share it, it'd be really, really helpful. So let's try and get that to $10,000 so we can really help out. All the money, every single cent, other than the like 3% fee that GoFundMe take. I know, lame, but all of it, I don't take any of it. All of it goes to the scholarship winners. So, all right, with that announcement out of the way, let's get into what to expect qualifications part of your check ride. Before meeting with you, the examiner is going to ask you for your FAA tracking number, or FTN. This is so that they can check your application for errors as well as get the results of your FAA written exam. So remember, we talked about how to apply for your, basically your check ride on IACRA. You're essentially creating an application for your private pilot's license, and that's the start of it. And then it gets approved once you've passed your check ride by the examiner. So that application is for your private pilot's license, and you put in all the hours you've done, all your information. And then, so the way your examiner can find that to take a look at it is your FTN or FAA tracking number. And so they're going to look up, you know, to see if your application has any errors or issues or whatever. They're going to look that over, and then they're going to get the results of your FAA written exam as well. And we'll talk about why that's important. This is why you and your instructor need to sit down before you schedule your check ride and submit this application on IACRA. The examiner will use the information to build the scenario they give you for your check ride, as well as prepare questions for you. The scenario will be based on questions you got wrong on the FAA written, among other things. So again, make sure you are sound on these areas. So these question codes, so when you take your FAA written exam and you get the results back, if you miss questions, there's going to be these question codes. And you can look up these question codes. We have these at parttimepilot.com. We give them to our students, you know, when they finish our course. So you can look those up, or you can just let us know. And you can look up these codes and see, you know, what subject that is. It might be like taxi wind corrections, right? You missed a question on that. They don't tell you the exact questions, but they tell you the subject, right? And then the examiners for your check ride will look at all the, they'll pull up all those subjects that you missed on your written exam, and they'll try and test you during your oral exam, your check ride scenario, cross country plan, and even your actual flight exam on those areas that you missed. So that right there is a huge clue of what you're going to be tested on. So make sure, you know, they'll test you on other things as well, but make sure that you are good on those areas that you missed, because you know for sure that you'll be tested on those. So we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Before the check ride even begins, the examiner needs to make sure you and the aircraft meet all qualifications. To do this, they will need you to prove this to them. They will need to see documentation that proves both you and the aircraft are current, qualified, and airworthy. This is stuff like a valid photo ID, your medical certificate, airworthiness certificate for the aircraft, registration, and maintenance logbooks, as well as your logbook. We will cover exactly what you need to show them in our check ride prep course. I'm not sure how much detail we're going to go on the podcast, but we'll get to that. So I want to give you guys a tip here. Go to your flight school the day before and meet the maintenance staff / mechanics. It doesn't have to be the day before. It could be multiple days before, whatever. But you want to go and meet the maintenance staff and mechanics there. Make sure all required inspections, documentation, airworthiness directives, and required equipment lists are present and up to date. Bookmark for your aircraft, bookmark them in the logbooks and make it easier to find during your oral exam. There may be multiple logbooks for airframe and power plant. Do the same thing with your own records to show your qualifications. Mark areas of your logbook and make sure it is neat and the numbers add up. Mark where your night flight hours are, your cross-country flight solos, and total hours are located, for example. So this will just make you look very prepared for the very first thing the examiner wants you to do. Okay, so you're going to meet the examiner. You're probably the first thing is you're going to shake their hand or whatever. You're going to pay them. And then you're going to go over your qualifications and the aircraft's qualifications. So this is a great time to make a great first impression. And I'm telling you, this matters. Especially, it matters more to some examiners than it does others. But if right off the bat you're organized, you have everything done that needs to be done, you sound competent and you know what you're talking about right off the bat, the examiner is going to ease up a little bit and maybe not quiz you or test you as hard, or, you know, they're going to start to have some confidence in you, and it's going to make your check ride probably a little bit easier. So what type of things are you going to have to, you know, prove for your qualifications? So first I mentioned it's going to be your qualifications, right? So you're going to have, they're going to check your photo ID matches with your medical certificate and make sure those are valid and up to date. And then your logbook, you're going to make sure that matches what's in the IACRA application and that you have all the minimum requirements for your private pilot's license. You know, all the hours, the night hours, cross-country flight hours, all that stuff. That you have the endorsements from your instructor, right? The required endorsements from your instructor. That's why, again, you want to sit down with your instructor and verify that you have all that. And then for the aircraft, once the examiner is sure that, you know, you are qualified for the flight that's about to come, then they're going to want you to show them that the aircraft that you're going to fly that day is qualified. And so that involves making sure that the aircraft is airworthy. So to do that, right, you have to, one, show them the airworthiness certificate, show them the registration and that it's not expired, you know, all the required documentation of the aircraft. You want to be able to show them where the operating limitations are in the POH or in the aircraft, on the placards, on the cockpit, and all that stuff. You're going to want to do the weight and balance for that day, and you want to make sure that you have an up-to-date empty weight and up-to-date, you know, data on the positions and arms of your calculations, right? I knew someone who failed their check ride because they had an old empty weight for their aircraft. The flight school did not give them the new empty weight, and so make sure you have the correct empty weight, because empty weight can change when new things are installed permanently into the aircraft. So make sure that, to check that it's airworthy, right, you have to make sure that it has all the inspections, right, the required inspections. So the 100-hour, the annual inspection, those are AVIATES, right? Annual VOR, the AVIATE mnemonic device, annual VOR, 100-hour, altimeter, things like that. Some are only required for IFR, some VFR, but you want to make sure that all those inspections have been done in the, you know, within the time frame that is required for those inspections. And so to do that, you need to check the maintenance logbooks. And that's why I mentioned, you know, meeting with the maintenance team or the mechanic and having them show you the logbooks and show you where they signed off on these inspections last, right? So for example, on the annual, you would want to look up the annual in the maintenance logbook, either the airframe or power plant logbooks. And then, so you want to find where the last annual was done, see that it was signed off by a certified mechanic, right? It has to be a certified mechanic, and then it has to be, because certain mechanics can do annual, certain can do 100 hours, so you have to make sure the right mechanic is doing these, and that could be something that your examiner asks you. And then you want to make sure that that date is within that time frame. So for an hour, you have a year, right? So the last time they did an annual, make sure that it was not more than a year ago, right? And you want to do that for all the required inspections. And if, for example, the 100-hour inspection, you need to check the tack times, right? The tachometer times, and make sure that 100 hours, it's not more than 100 hours over the last time it had its 100-hour inspection. And then what I mentioned, the tip I mentioned, was to maybe put a little sticky note in those maintenance logbooks on the pages where those things are, so that you can just flip in front of the examiner, you can flip to those sticky notes and you can say, here's the annual. You can see here's the date signed off by a certified mechanic. And then you can go 100 hour, you know, VOR, all those things, whatever it is that you need for your flight. And then on top of that, if there's any airworthiness directives, ADs, right? And then you want to understand, that's a good question for, you know, the owners of the plane, your flight school, or the mechanic, what ADs does this aircraft have? And those are going to be in the maintenance logs as well. And then you want to understand each AD, because they might be a recurring AD or just a one-time AD. And that might be something that your examiner asks, right? So they might, if you show them, here's this airworthiness directive, you know, it was met here, signed off here on this date by a certified mechanic, and they might ask you, is that a one-time thing or does that need to be done recurringly? What are kind of the details of that AD? So you'll want to be able to know that and expect any questions on that airworthiness directive. Okay, I think that's kind of the general breakdown. You know, I'm just going off the top of my head right now, but we have everything in the course written down step by step of what you need to show, what that kind of looks like, and have prepared, like I talked about, for proving both you and the aircraft are airworthy and able, qualified to fly that day. All right, now I want to talk about what to expect on the oral portion of your flight exam, or your check ride, sorry. So the first part of the check ride is referred to as the check ride oral exam. Now, technically, I said the first part is kind of the qualifications, but a lot of people lump in the qualifications part into the oral exam, so that's kind of what I'm mentioning here. And this will consist of you and the examiner reviewing things on the ground, and it could take anywhere from 1 to 5 hours, depending on how well you do and how much you got wrong on your FAA written exam, because the examiner will build their plan of action for you based off of the ACS, that's the Airman Certificate Standards, and what you missed on the written exam. If you are wishy-washy with your answers, they will ask more questions and try and dig deeper in order to understand your level of knowledge, or lack thereof. The examiner can test you on anything listed in the Private Pilot Airman Certificate Standards for the oral and flight portion of the check ride, so you will need to be prepared for everything. Now, I mentioned, right, it could take 1 to 5 hours, the oral exam. That's a wide range, right? Now, This is just the oral exam, and after this, you would go on to the flight exam, okay? Now, the flight portion, I'm guessing, is probably the most stressful for all of us, and we need to be, you know, the most rested, our mind needs to be sharp the most for that flight portion. So, pro hack, pro tip, right, is to do really well on your oral exam. If you could do really well on your oral exam and make that just like an hour long, you are going to be more fresh, less stressed, and have more, your mind's going to be sharper for the flight portion of your exam, okay? If you have a very stressful and long oral exam, you are also setting yourself up for failure on the flight portion of the exam if you make it through the oral exam. They may just fail you there once it starts taking 4 or 5 hours. Now, why does it take longer? Well, because if you don't know your stuff, they need to know where your knowledge is going wrong. And if, for example, let's say they ask you a question, right? And you answer it correctly, but vaguely, right? So you don't have all the details. You may not understand the first principles, but you repeated something kind of vague. You remembered a sentence or a definition of what the question was, right? They're going to start to think, oh, do they really understand kind of the first principle fundamentals of how this works? And they'll dig down into the details of how that concept works and start asking you questions on there. So now, instead of this topic just being one question, now this topic is 2, 3, 4, 5 questions long, and that's how it starts to take a lot longer. So, pro tip, do really well on your oral exam. And that's where we really, at Part-Time Pilot, you know, we really try and tell people and communicate to people that that's why we built our course the way we do, both the online ground school and the check ride prep, so that you are so prepared for the knowledge part of it that it makes the flying part of it a lot easier. You're more confident, you're ahead of the aircraft mentally, all that stuff. And that is not seen any more importantly or clearly than on the day of your check ride, right? You really want to be clear-minded for your flight. It is important to note that most examiners, while they feel scary and intimidating, actually want you to pass. They do not expect you to be 100% perfect. However, their job is to ensure they are only going to give out private pilot certificates to competent and safe pilots. If you deviate from standards momentarily, this might be okay, right? For most examiners, probably okay. But if you show a pattern of not meeting standards, this will end up in a failure. So let me just continue and then maybe I'll give an example. On top of that, if there is something that you do not know, it is okay to say, I don't know this, I can't quite recall this, but I know exactly where to find it. Then you would pull out your FAR aim book and look up whatever it is. You can use your phone or tablet to look things up, but just make sure that your source is the FAA. You don't want to be just Googling some blog or forum. Even though Part-Time Pilot is accurate and built off all the FAA material and all that, don't use it as a reference. Make sure you use FAA sources as a reference in your check ride, because that's what the examiner is going to want to see. They might not know about Part-Time Pilot. They might not know about the blogger or the TikToker or whatever, right? So they're not going to trust those people if they don't know them. So make sure it's only from the FAA. The PHAC, those documents, the FAR AIM, that sort of stuff, have that with you, as we talked about in the last episode of what you need to have with you. Have those with you and ready. And this does a couple things, right? So they'll allow you to do this maybe once, twice, maybe even 3 times, right? But after that, then it really becomes a pattern, like I talked about. It's now become a pattern of you not knowing things, you not meeting standards, and that's when you're going to get a fail. But 1 or 2 times, if you say, you know, I can't quite recall that regulation, but I know exactly where it is, and then you show them that you quickly find it in the FAR AIM, and you read it off, you understand it, and it comes right back to you, right? They're not going to fail you for that, right? That's why we carry around this big, fat FAR AIM book. We're not supposed to have it all memorized 100% of the time. They understand that. Again, only once or twice is that pretty much allowed. If it becomes a pattern, they're going to fail you. So here we have a list of FAA resources that you should have with you or be able to access during your oral. Again, you can have this on like your iPad. I would have a lot of these, you know, a physical copy. If you can, at least the FAR AIM, have a physical copy of the FAR AIM. The rest can be on your iPad. But these are what I would have on you just so you can be able to reference these, you know, because I mentioned that you want to reference only FAA stuff. So the Airplane Flying Handbook, we have a link to download that PDF here in the course. The Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, that's the PHAC. the AIM, right? Aeronautical Information Manual. Airman Certificate Standards, that's the ACS. That's what they'll be using. Again, I mentioned this previously. That is a great tool to understand and know what you're going to be tested on, because that is what the examiner uses to figure out what to test you on. Airport Facilities Directory, so AFD chart supplement. VFR, IFR charts, you know, make sure your charts for the area you're flying are up to date. These things update. You don't want to have old charts. That could be something that they could dock you for. And then the risk management handbook from the FAA as well would be a good thing to have with you, at least a digital copy on your iPad. Most of the oral exam will be focused on the cross-country plan the examiner asked you to plan and bring with you. So this is where it differs from like the FAA written, right? The questions they ask you are not going to be like fill in the blanks or multiple choice questions like you'd find on a written type exam. They're going to be scenario-based questions where they're going to try and, you know, paint a scenario, and then you have to deduce from the scenario what concepts you should be concerned about in that scenario. And that's all going to kind of revolve around your cross-country plan scenario that they give you. And they should give this to you a couple days before so that you can plan it out with up-to-date weather. They might give it to you earlier than that and tell you to just use a certain day's weather to plan your check ride scenario. Depends on the examiner on that. But so they'll give you that scenario. Say, for example, say we're going to fly to airport XYZ, you know, through this at this time of day, and here's the weather, or use up-to-date weather, current weather, or use this weather here. Again, it depends, but that's kind of what the scenario is going to be. And most of the oral exam will be focused on around this, right, in those scenario-based questions. The examiner will have you explain the route, and then will ask to show you certain calculations. For example, after you show them the route, so that you're going to, you know, pull out your iPad or your sectional chart. And again, I recommend having a paper version of everything. So if you have this in 4Flight, you have the route input into 4Flight, also have it drawn out on your sectional chart. Okay. Your examiner could take away your iPad. So always have a paper backup, especially, I recommend it for all flying, but especially for your check ride. So after you show them a route, they may ask you what altitude you are flying at on certain legs of the flight. And when you respond, they may ask you why you chose that altitude. So that's just an example, right, of how they're going to base their questions around the scenario that they give you. Be sure to print out and bring all the information you used in your calculations. So if you got ground temperature from a METAR, print out the METAR. If you got winds from winds aloft, print the winds aloft out and bring that with you. You want to be able, if they ask you, how did you calculate this, right? And then you would say, you know, I calculated this using temperature and blah, blah, blah. And they say, what temperature did you use? What, you know, where did you get that temperature? If you have this printed off, you can show them, hey, it's from this, you know, it's from this TAF that I got yesterday. Here's the date on the TAF. You show them the TAF. Here's the temperature listed right there. Boom. Okay. So print that stuff off. Have paper copies as backups, like I mentioned. Everything is fair game, and they will focus particularly on things you got wrong in your FAA written exam. So again, make sure you work with your instructor and shore up any of those areas that you were once weak in, okay? So that's kind of the general of that. The rest of the oral exam will be on anything else you learned in ground school that the examiner wants to ask you about, okay? So a lot of it's going to be around the scenario, and then a lot of it is going to be on what you missed on the FAA written, but maybe you didn't miss a lot on the FAA written, or maybe this particular examiner, you know, depends on the examiner. Sometimes they have trends of what they like to ask students. Maybe it's a new trending kind of topic with pilots, or maybe it's things around safety that this particular examiner thinks are important. So this could be things like weather, airspeeds, airspaces, you know, categories, classes and types of aircraft, pilot certificates and qualifications, pilot and command limitations and responsibilities, pilot for hire limitations, alcohol and drug use and rules, human factors and aviation medical type stuff, incidents, accidents, and emergencies, aerodynamic fundamentals, things like lift, drag, stall, left turning tendency, adverse yaw, etc., you know, load factor, aircraft V speeds, right-of-way rules, seatbelt and harness rules, minimum safe altitudes, speed limits, ATC clearance and compliance, fuel requirements, aircraft maintenance, you know, navigation, things like VORs, DMEs, TACANs, VORTEX, GPS, emergencies, night operations, and that those are just some. Okay, that's not the complete list. Again, the complete list is the Airman Certificate Standards. But these are some things that they will throw into and around your cross-country scenario and likely ask you about. And then, as I mentioned before, anything in the ACS is fair game. And again, total length of the oral exam can vary anywhere from 1 to 5 hours. It all depends on how well you know your stuff, so make sure to go through this course that we have in the CheckRide prep course and always be thinking of how you would explain this concept to your examiner. And in this course, so as we go through this course, we'll kind of give you an outline of what that is, but we're going to, like, for example, show you step by step how to plan your cross-country scenario, but then thrown throughout, we have green text that are possible examiner questions, scenario-based questions of your examiner. So we have those littered throughout the lessons, the step-by-step lessons of how to prepare for your CheckRide, and then we'll give an answer that you should give the examiner as well. So we have a bunch of those scenario-based questions that you might get that you wouldn't find on like FA written or whatever. So we have those here in the CheckRide prep course. Are you struggling on your radio calls to ATC? Are you looking for a better way to practice that's not up there in the air in that stressful situation? Well, I want to talk to you guys about something called AR Sim, or Aviation Radio Simulator by Plain English. It lets you practice talking to ATC through all phases of VFR and IFR flight, from taxi out to takeoff, all at your own pace. There's no simulator setup needed, and it works on any device, mobile or the web. So whether you're a novice or seasoned pro, the guided communication curriculum in trainer mode will elevate your comms proficiency greatly. Download AR Sim by Plain English today and check out our show notes where you can get 10% off using a coupon code. It is a great tool and I highly, highly recommend it. All right, now I want to talk about what to expect on the flight portion. So let's say you rock your oral exam again. You know, pro tip is to do really well on that, to take some stress off you for the time you get to the flight portion of the exam. So let's say you did that, you rocked it, and now you're moving on. They say, okay, well, why don't you go pre-flight the aircraft? You know, they're going to go out there with you, and we'll get ready for our flight. So following the oral exam is the flight portion, and the first thing you should do following the oral exam is a self-assessment, okay? So don't forget your self-assessment. The oral and flight check ride can be very stressful, and stress is one of the items in the I'm Safe checklist, and talk about that in ground school, and we'll mention that again in the check ride prep course. And whenever you do these things, don't do them silently. You want to verbalize what you're thinking and what you're doing, especially if it's a certain procedure like this, like the I'm Safe checklist. So after the oral exam, you say, okay, well, before we do that, I'm gonna run kind of a self-checklist, self-assessment on myself to make sure that me as a pilot, that I'm ready to go. I've sort of already been doing this in my head, but I just want to verbalize it for you, the examiner. So I want to make sure, you know, that I don't feel ill, that, you know, I don't have a headache, that I'm not on any medication, that I got enough sleep, I got a good meal in, a good breakfast in or whatever. I'm not stressed out, I'm feeling good, all that stuff, right? All that stuff in the I'm Safe checklist. Verbalize that when you do it, because if you don't, they'll probably be like, hey, I realize you never did a self-assessment and you looked kind of stressed. Do you think that was safe to fly while you were stressed? So that could be something that the examiner does. So always verbalize something. Don't just do it in silent, because you have to show that you're doing these things to the examiner. If you are stressed out, mentally exhausted, or if there are weather winds that are beyond your personal minimums, that's the other thing, your personal minimums, you are allowed to reschedule the flight portion of your exam. I want you guys to know that you're allowed. Now, you can't just like for no reason, right? But if you're too stressed out, or if, you know, there's some crosswinds that are beyond your personal minimums, don't be afraid to reschedule the flight exam. Now, this happened to me unexpectedly because something was wrong with the aircraft, right? So by the time we went in during our pre-flight check, we found something wrong with the aircraft. And so I was really upset at my flight school, just, you know, another thing that was a bummer about that. But in the end, it was kind of a blessing because I got to kind of just regroup. I had already had the oral exam done, and then we rescheduled the flight exam, and I could just prepare for that. And I knew that the oral exam was out of the way. It was a lot less stressful than that long day of, you know, doing all of this in one day. So, you know, you got to have a good reason for it. But if there is a good reason, don't be afraid to do it. It can be actually beneficial. The examiner will not count this against you. In fact, making a decision to reschedule the flight because of personal minimums is a great pilot decision and shows the examiner that you are in control. So do not be afraid to stop and reschedule, especially if the oral was a long and exhausting process. This is called a discontinuance, and the check ride may be rescheduled anytime in the next 60 days. Now, I've never heard of an examiner like failing somebody because they asked to reschedule because they were stressed or something. But if they do, it's wrong. And if I were you, if that happens to you, I would go seek out the FAA and say, this is not, it's not okay. You guys try to foster an environment of safety, and here I am making a decision based off safety for the check ride, and I got docked for it. Now, I've never seen that happen. I don't think it has happened. Maybe it has or not, but if it does, that's wrong. So don't be afraid, again, to do that. The flight portion of the check ride will vary depending on your examiner and the plan of action that they made for you. However, this is in the course, but here I'm going to outline the consensus of flight check rides performed by the FAA in the past few years. That said, you should ask your flight instructor what you can expect on the check ride and be sure to prepare for what he/she says as well. As I mentioned before, your instructor likely knows the tendencies of the local examiner and therefore is your best source of information. Finally, it is important to remember that your examiner can test you on anything in the private pilot ACS. Not only is the examiner will the examiner ask you to perform maneuvers, talk to ATC, taxi, navigate, etc., but he/she will also try to distract you by asking you questions during critical phases of flight. Now, maybe not all of them do, but this is another advantage, and I want to give an example of why it can help to use a designated pilot examiner that your flight instructor is familiar with. Because what happened for me is my flight instructor said, hey, you should use this guy. We kind of know, you know, we kind of prepare based off his check rides. So, you know, you're prepared for what he does. And just a tip, you know, he likes to ask people, give people a mental load while they're doing flying procedures and taxi procedures and stuff like that. And so just be aware that if you're in a critical phase of flight or something, he might try and distract you away from that and try to get you to make mistakes by asking you questions. And so what I did is, and this happened to me right when we were taxiing, he asked me some questions while I was like listening on the radio, right? I was, you know, trying to make sure I'm taxiing to the right location, all that stuff. And when my examiner asked me a question, I said, just hang on one sec. I'll get to that question once I'm parked in the run-up area. I want to focus on the radio right now. So just hold off for 1 minute. And by the time we got to the run-up area, the examiner completely forgot to ask me a question, because I was like, when we got there and parked and everything was safe, I was like, oh yeah, so you had a question? And the examiner was like, I forgot what it was. No worry about it. So that's kind of a hack right there, if that happens, to, you know, have them say, let me wait till we're out of this critical phase, or I'm not listening on the radio as much, and then I'll answer your question. That is a great, you know, again, it shows that you're being safe. It might happen like it did for me, where you never end up having to answer the question because they forget about it. So just a tip right there, both a tip to keep your mind focused on the critical phase of the flight, but also, and that should be right part of your pre-flight brief, right, is to say, you know, let's have a quiet cockpit during critical phases of flight, all that stuff. So you can remind them that, hey, that was in my brief, like, let's just wait till we're in a safe spot. But also using a DPE that your flight instructor is familiar with. Those are two kind of things that can help you out. Okay, I recommend doing that. But here is the standard check ride flow that I mentioned, kind of the outline of your flight exam. So you'll do your self-assessment, right, that we talked about. Then you'll do a pre-flight check of the aircraft. You'll do your startup checklist. You'll do the engine start checklist. You'll taxi. You'll take off. You'll climb out. You'll go en route to the first couple of checkpoints on your check ride scenario that you planned, right? They'll want you to show them that you can navigate on a few couple legs of your flight. And then they're probably going to, after they're like, okay, you can navigate, blah, 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 they're going to do some sort of simulated emergency to see how you react to that. Okay, so they might, you know, pull the engine to idle and say you lost an engine. They might say you lost radio comms. They might say you have an electrical fire. They might say you have an engine fire, right? They might do something like that, and then you'll have to react accordingly, do the appropriate checklist, and do that. Then they might say that you're lost, right? So they might, you know, what's your loss procedure? Or they might make you lost. That's what happened to me, right? They took over controls, and they had me put my head down and put me in a spot a little bit away and had me, you know, get back onto my course using, you know, navigation. And then they might have you do a diversion, right? So they say, okay, let's say that simulated emergency we talked about, it's a real emergency, so now we got to divert to the closest airport. So you would have to then plan that diversion. So, right, you'll circle around, you'll kind of pick, you know, on your chart which runway you're going to go to, which alternate airport you want to go to, kind of plot your heading, you know, the distance, do a little quick fuel calculation, stuff like that. Plan that diversion while you're in a safe, you know, circling flight, and then start to execute that diversion. Then by the time, they probably won't have you go all the way to the airport, or they may have you do that, not sure. But once they've seen enough, then they'll continue on, have you do something else. Like, for example, unusual attitudes, right? They might take controls again, have you put your head down, or, you know, put foggles on you and have you recover from unusual attitudes. Then they might have you keep those foggles on and show you some instrument flight, right? They might have you do some climbing turns or descending turns using your instruments, or just some normal turns or something like that using instruments to navigate somewhere just on your instruments. Then they might have you do compass turns. They might say, hey, you know, they might put a sticker over your heading indicator and say, all right, let's navigate to this heading and this heading using your compass. This is the one time you might, could come up in the oral as well, but those compass errors, right, that they might test you or ask you about those pesky compass errors that we have to remember. Then they might have you do slow flight, right, to show you the slow flight maneuver. That'll probably naturally progress into stalls, doing simulated stalls, power on, power off. And stall. What comes with those is the stall recovery. Please recover from those. And then the ground reference maneuvers, you know, S-turns. So they'll find a road and have you do S-turns over the road or, you know, fence line or railroad tracks or something like that. And then turns around a point. So those are the ground-based reference maneuvers. And then steep turns. They'll have you do steep turns. And all these maneuvers, right, they have a certain criteria that you have to meet on, you know, your airspeed can't deviate too much, your altitude can't deviate too much. And all of this is listed in the Airman Certificate Standards. So if you want to know, when you're practicing with your instructor for these things, you're practicing this maneuver for your check ride, you want to know what these limitations are for your maneuvers so you can practice within those limits. Then they'll probably have you return to base, right, to return to the airport you started at. And then that's when you'll do some landings, right? So you'll probably do specialty landings and takeoffs. So maybe, you know, short field takeoff, soft field takeoff, short field landing, soft field landing, you know, no flap landing, things like that. And also a normal landing as well. And then they'll have you land full stop, taxi back. Do not want to forget a post-flight check. And, you know, I've heard horror stories of people not doing, getting all the way done, passing all of this, getting back and not doing a post-flight checklist. So you want to make sure you do that. You tie up the aircraft, you know, make sure everything is in order, the keys are out, all that stuff. And then you'll want to do a debrief with them and say, hey, would you like to debrief? Blah, blah, blah. But at that point, hopefully they're saying congratulations and they're shaking your hand and saying that you are now a pilot. So that is basically the general flow of what to expect on the flight portion of your check ride. All right, now finally, I want to talk about what to expect in terms of how you are graded. The examiner's job is to determine if you meet the requirements set out by the FAA. This means you'll have to have all the required flight hours completed, pass your FAA written, and pass the check ride. In the check ride, they are looking for you to show competency and knowledge in every area of the Private Pilot Airman Certificate Standards, or the ACS. The ACS is exactly what they use to grade you, so the ACS should be your best friend. Not only does it list everything you need to know and be competent in, but it also lists the following information for each subject. The task, for example, engine starting. So you'll have to be able to do that task, engine starting. References, where you can find information on how to perform the task. Okay, so that can help you study and, you know, prepare for your check ride. Objective, For example, to determine that the applicant exhibits satisfactory knowledge, risk management, and skills associated with recommended engine starting procedures. This is the examiner's objective or goal. Okay? Next is knowledge. Example, applicant demonstrates understanding of starting under various conditions, starting the engine by use of external power, engine limitations as they relate to starting. This lists the knowledge they can ask you questions on either during the task or during the oral exam. Risk management, for example, applicant demonstrates the ability to identify, assess, and mitigate risks of propeller safety. This lists the risk management information that they will probe you for by creating scenarios to see what you would do and how you would manage that risk. Skills is the last section for each topic. And for example, they might list for a skill. Applicant demonstrates ability to position the airplane properly, considering structures, other aircraft, wind, and the safety of nearby persons and property. So this is when you perform the task, this is what they're looking for you to do. So again, it tells you the task is engine starting, the references where you can find more information, the objective, so the examiner's objective or goal here with this task, the knowledge, so that's the knowledge you have to have around this subject that they can test you or ask you about, the risk management, the things you have to know about and do during the task to avoid risk and safety and have safety, and then the skills, the things you have to be able to demonstrate your ability to do when you perform the task. So all this information is listed in the ACS for each thing that they'll have you do during the check ride, right? So each task, right? So engine starting, they'll have all this information. They'll have it for taxiing, everything, right? So that's an example of what the ACS will tell you. Now, some of the ACS subjects are left a little bit up to the examiner's discretion. For example, in the above ACS for engine starting, it states the applicant should demonstrate the ability to identify and assess risk, while other subjects are more clear-cut, such as the ACS for steep turns that states an applicant must demonstrate the ability to perform a steep turn while maintaining the entry altitude of plus or minus 100 feet, an airspeed of plus or minus 10 knots, a bank of plus or minus 5 degrees, and a rollout on the same entry heading plus or minus 10 degrees. If you break these limits, you are likely to hear that you have failed. It still depends on the examiner, and some may be more lenient than others. Some may allow for a momentary excursion from those limits, while others may not. The FAA states they are not allowed to give second chances on maneuvers. It also depends on how well you have done on the check ride before this point. For example, if you have nailed the oral portion of the test, start the engine, taxi, climb out smoothly and on centerline, and are confident in your use of checklists and talking to ATC, the examiner is more likely to let you deviate from limits, from as far as limits go, right? Just a little bit. They might be a little more lenient, and it's up to their discretion on the things that we talk about that aren't as clear cut, right? So maybe not on the maneuvers where you have to be plus or minus 100 feet, plus or minus 10 knots, plus or minus 5 degrees, all that stuff. You know, those are clear cut. So those are easy numbers. But if you've nailed everything else and you hit, like, you know, your bank changes by 6 degrees, your examiner may be a little lenient on that, or on things where, you know, it's a little more less clear cut and there's not specific numbers, they might be a little more lenient on that. Remember, a momentary deviation from standards may be acceptable depending on your examiner and is likely acceptable once or twice, but a pattern of deviation will result in a failed check ride. If at any point you are told that you have failed the check ride, the examiner has the option to stop the test completely or continue. The examiner might choose to stop the test completely if you have deviated a lot from standards or if you have done something very unsafe. But if the examiner just tells you that you have failed a maneuver and thus the check ride and does not tell you that the check ride is over, then the decision to continue is up to you. At this point, you have failed the check ride, and that means you are going to have to try again after doing some practice with your instructor. But you still get credit for everything else that you did satisfactory. And this is huge, okay? So the fail only relates to the particular maneuver or area that you did not meet standards on. This means that when you return to repeat the check ride, you will only need to complete what you failed on previously. So you don't have to redo the entire check ride. This is really key. So you have the decision to continue if you want to complete the rest of the maneuvers in check ride or not. You may want to do this if you have just started the check ride. This way you can see if there are other areas that you fail and you can practice both of these with your instructor. You wouldn't want to fail a maneuver, stop the exam, go practice that maneuver, and come back for a check ride only to fail another maneuver that you didn't practice. However, if you are near the end of your check ride, you may want to just call it a day. Hearing that you have failed the check ride can be quite stressful, and after a long, stressful day, this puts you in a bad mental state. Remember the I Am Safe checklist when making this decision. So again, each particular item in the ACS that you have to accomplish is its own thing. So if you fail a maneuver, you have failed the maneuver and you have technically failed the check ride. You can't become a pilot. But when you redo that check ride, you do not have to do everything again. You just have to do the parts that you failed it. And you get the decision when you hear that you have failed a maneuver and thus a check ride, you get the decision to continue or not. Now, there's benefits to continuing, right? Like I said, if you continue on, you may fail another couple maneuvers and you know, okay, well, I'm doing this again already. So I'm glad I realized that I can't do these maneuvers either. So now I know exactly what to practice for next time. So I highly recommend doing that if you can. But if you learn that you failed and it just totally destroys you mentally, stresses you out, something like that, again, the I Am Safe checklist, it may not be the best thing to continue. But so just if you hear that, I want you to just breathe. You know, realize that your life's not over. It's okay. You can do this again. It's going to cost you some money, but it's okay. All right. So take a deep breath. Don't stress out. Try and finish your check ride if you can, as long as it's safe, and really use it as a learning tool. Ask the examiner questions. You know, really use it as a learning experience from there on. And you know, you're going to have to come back again. So try and get as much information as possible on what you got to improve on. And just have a good attitude with it. It's not like if you fail something, you're going to have to redo everything. So that is nice. And it's good to know because a lot of people don't know that and they get in that situation and they're just like, the examiner asks them, do you want to continue or do you want to go back? And they'll just say, let's go back. Now they didn't know what else they needed to practice on. So they go up for another check ride. They've practiced that one maneuver they failed on. Let's say it's steep turns. And then the examiner has them do S-turns, and then they fail that, and then, boom, they're back to having to pay another $500 to $700 to do another check ride. I wanted to get that out there. Now, the grades you may obtain on a maneuver or exam as a whole are as follows. You may get a satisfactory, which is a pass, an unsatisfactory, which is a fail, or a discontinuance. A discontinuance occurs if there are equipment issues, weather issues, TFRs, temporary flight restrictions, or personal issues that cause the flight portion to be delayed. In a discontinuance, you get up to 60 days to reschedule the exam and finish from where you left off. Finally, remember to always use the I Am Safe and PAVE checklist to assess risk throughout the day of that check ride. If you think you are not in a state to fly, don't put yourself in a bad situation and use that discontinuance as needed. Also, you can always ask for a break during the oral or before the flight portion, grab some water, food, and use the restroom to get yourself in a good, relaxed state. All right, so this is what to expect for your check ride. Okay, so we've gone over every single part of what to expect on the check ride. In the check ride course, part-time pilot check ride course, we also have a video. It's a live stream recording of all this stuff on what to expect on the private pilot check ride. So we did a live video on that and we have that recording. It was a really in-depth coverage of all the stuff. So go ahead and check that out inside the check ride prep course. But that's it for today's episode. Now, next week, we're going to continue on with check ride prep and we're going to go now into a little bit more of the details with proving your qualifications like we talked about. We're going to go into the details of that and then possible oral exam questions. So a lot more good detailed stuff to cover. Today was kind of like the introduction of what exactly to expect. So you can try and build, you know, some expectations of what it's going to be like in your head. And by the time we're done with these episodes, with these lessons in the check ride prep course, you're going to feel so like, you know, exactly what to expect. Nothing's going to surprise you. You're going to have confidence and you're going to nail your check ride. So thank you guys for listening. Remember, please share the GoFundMe link Let's try and get to our goal of 10,000. And yeah, thank you guys. Hey guys, it's Nick. I want to take a second to speak directly to the student pilots out there. You might be a student pilot that is, you know, wondering what to do next, how to get started, or maybe you're looking for the right ground training or flight training, or maybe you've already started ground training or flight training and you're stuck, you're in a rut, and you're looking for a change, something to help get you out of that hurdle. From my own experience in flight training, after 3 years, five instructors, and $22,000, and wanting to quit multiple times, and then now, after seeing hundreds and hundreds of student pilots through part-time pilot, I've realized that the number one thing that makes student pilots fail is that they do not have a good fundamental understanding of the ground training when they get to the more advanced flight lessons. Now, who here has seen Top Gun Maverick? Do you remember in the movie when he says, "Don't think, just do"? Now, when I heard this, I was like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant, because this is exactly what you have to be as a pilot. Now, of course, it's not that we're not thinking, but it's that we understand things like weather, aerodynamics, what our instruments are telling us, what ATC is telling us. We have such a good core fundamental understanding of these things that we don't have to think about them. And when we don't have to think about them, we can instinctively feel and fly the aircraft, look out for dangers, and avoid emergency situations. If we do have to think about these things, it's going to put us behind mentally, and we're going to be behind the aircraft. And when you're behind the aircraft mentally, bad things happen. And this happens when you don't have a good understanding of the ground school content. So now the first 10 to 15 hours of your flight training can go smooth, even if you don't have a good understanding of ground training, right? You can go up for a discovery flight, have a blast. You can go up, learn how to take off, learn how to land. You may be even able to solo for the first time, fly a plane for the first time. Everything's great and dandy. But once you get into, you know, bad weather flying, or flying at heavily trafficked airports, or speaking with ATC for Bravo clearance, or cross-country flight planning and flying solo on a cross-country flight, things get a little more advanced. And when this happens and you don't have a good understanding of the ground school concepts, you're gonna hit a wall. You're gonna start to get behind the aircraft. And when this happens, if you have a good flight instructor, they're going to stop you and they're going to say, okay, we need to do one-on-one ground lessons. And now you're going to be paying your flight instructor to not even fly with you, but instead $50, $60, $70 an hour to just teach you the ground school content that you should already know. And the worst part is you're not flying with them. So the flight training that you gain, the currency, the proficiency that you gained is going to be lost, and you're going to have to redo those lessons. What happens to most student pilots is they continuously hit these mental blocks where they get behind the aircraft, they start making mistakes, and then they catch up with the ground knowledge only to have that happen again. And they start to get in this vicious cycle of having to redo trainings and repay for trainings until it gets to the point where them or their family, they finally say, you know what, this has to stop. We can no longer afford the training costs without any progress, you know, and they end up quitting. Now, so how do we avoid that? Well, here comes part-time pilot. Again, I said I went through my own experience of this, and I realized that most flight training and ground training is not tailored to the modern-day student pilot. When I say modern-day student pilot, I just say modern-day part-time student pilot, because let's face it, there's a very small percentage of us that can go and dedicate 24/7, 365 to our flight training, or not even miss a beat and be able to pay for flight training without working. So most of us have a full-time job, or maybe a part-time job. We have kids, we have family, we have school. We have all these other responsibilities on top of flight training. And most of these flight trainings and ground trainings are not tailored towards you. And so how is it the part-time pilot tailors to the modern day student pilot? Well, the first way we do that is by keeping ground school interesting. You want to avoid being boring, you want to avoid that burnout. So how we do that is we present our material in multiple ways, and you're actually listening to one of them right now. You can consume our content via this podcast and an audio recording. You can do this while you're running, while you're driving in traffic, again, tailoring to that busy part-time student pilot. Or you can read through our written lessons. You know, I like to read, so for those of you that like to read, you can read through the lessons. You can see the step-by-step examples and the procedures that we have. Or you can look through our study guide and see our diagrams and mnemonic devices, have that visual cue, those visual cues and aids that help further your understanding. Or you can watch our videos. Or you can take our quizzes and practice tests to reinforce what you just learned. And then finally, you can join us live weekly for our live Q&A and our live lessons so you can see in real time these things taught out and these examples done in real time. And then finally, you can utilize our group community to form study groups, get questions answered 24/7. All of this is tailored for the modern day student pilot to keep ground school interesting, keep it from being boring, keep from having that burnout, and to find ways that you can consume the content throughout your busy schedule. And guess what? It works. We've had over 350 student pilots come through, take and pass their FAA exams without a single student failing. That's right. A single student has yet to tell me that they failed either their FAA written or their FAA check ride. So that is just proof in the pudding right there that our concepts, the way we explain things in plain written English, and the way we give you multiple ways to consume this content is working. So if this sounds like something you might be interested in and you want to come join us, we'd love to have you. Just go to www.parttimepilot.com, click on Online Ground School, and we'll see you inside the Online Ground School. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.